President Hamm, could the Rules Committee staff make those available to all members of the Senate?
Mr. Hamilton indicated that there wasn't anything tonight that we don't have copies of already.
Okay, but I guess my point is if there's something out there that we may be seeing tomorrow, if we could get that information as soon as possible to all members of the Senate.
Mr. Chairman, there are other statements that we have received from the prosecutor's office, which we will copy, have copied and made available to all members of the committee of the Senate.
Senator Booth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Herman, I'd like to take you back to this statement here, statement of Lori Herman that the attorney up on the bench up there read. Line 16.
Page.
A new sentence.
Which page?
Page.
Page 34, line 16. And it became, quote, and it became, do we have that now? Quote, and it became pretty clear the direction this thing was going. And having been down this road before, I was somewhat fearful, etc. Evidently, you had other experiences and other things that would relate to things of this nature that the governor had done before and did not remember, or he should have known or shouldn't have known. In other words, you've had other experiences with the governor on this, on these occasions. Is that true according to this statement?
Experience of an investigation, yes. That's what I was referring to, sir.
But if it was only one other, it would appear that, I don't know why you got so excited about the fearfulness of he would be interviewed and that he only talked about the things that he knew what it was he knew. That bothers me a little bit. And back to Senator Ray's statement of or question on a scale of 1 to 10. And you viewed this thing as a 2 or a 3. Yet, on the other hand, it was important enough for you to leave the office to make the call to Mr. Arsenault. It was also very important to you at that time, higher than probably your 2 or 3, to take time out of your busy schedule to go to the airport, to Gold Street. And yet you didn't find it important enough to report to the governor that this had been accomplished. Why was that, that we went from very important to take time out of your very busy schedule being deputy chief of staff, to leave this building, to leave your office, and run to the airport to Gold Street, run someplace else to make it, down to the Baranoff to make a telephone call to Lenny Arsenault, which I might say, all right, I'll conclude with that and just not conclude, but just to ask you, how come, why the great difference is this?
I think I can answer that. As I understood the question from Senator Ray, Senator, he asked me during the 2.5 days that the governor was in the office before he went to the Orient how important this was as it related to the other items on his schedule, how important it was on his schedule to the other things that were happening at the time during that 2.5 day period of time. That's how I understood the question.
Mr. Chairman, I could read it for you exactly verbatim what I said if you'd like.
Well, Senator, I think we can probably work it out here. There are a lot of questions that are being repeated over the course of this testimony, and we just have to...
I will back off on that. I just wanted to note that there is this kind of controversy about it.
I think it's important, Mr. Chairman, to note that the question was asked on a scale of 1 to 10 back in October, and the phone call that the Senator describes was after the investigation came underway, and there are two different periods of time. I don't want there to be misleading inference in the record.
Mr. Chairman, it was a general question.
Senator Abboud has the floor, sir.
Well,
I'll give you another opportunity.
I think you should straighten this out before we go any farther, exactly what was said, and not surmise what somebody thought was said.
May I continue, Mr.
Senator?
When you were appointed by the governor, did you have any, again, these are all my questions. You were appointed by the governor. Did you have any, background in government agencies or any state business that you can rely upon to do your duty as a deputy chief of staff when you came aboard? Please explain, as nearly as you can recall, your conversation, just capsule. In other words, your conversation with Mr. Arsenault. His statements, his testimony states he didn't understand what you were talking about. He had no idea what you were talking about, and I would go to...
I think that's probably correct.
Again, I have one person saying one thing and another person saying another. I'll let that go. Tell me, concerning the cash expenditures for the Gold Street, that in particular, and I think I've read in some of your testimony where you carried a wad of some cash with you when you accompanied the governor to pay for certain things at certain times that needed to be paid for at the time with cash. I think that was part of your statement. Do you keep records of these expenditures as to whether they are state business, personal business, or political business, and do you have a record of that?
I don't keep records of the money. I keep generally, Senator, about $50 in the governor's personal funds with me at all times. I do all of his...
Why, they'd hang me if I didn't keep good track of the money I spent for state money.
It's his personal money, Senator. Yeah. It isn't public funds that I'm spending.
But this was state money that was paid for, or was this...
Negative. It was personal funds. His personal funds.
To send the RFP Gold Street to Fairbank?
Yes, sir.
Personal funds?
That's correct.
Are you... contracting officer for the governor's office at all? Part of your duties, are you a contract officer?
Certifying officer, yes.
Certifying, what's the difference?
I sign off, I have the authority to sign off on official documents, yes.
You have the official authority to pay invoices and things?
Okay.
On contracts?
Yes,
I do.
You
do that often? Is that part of your job description?
Yes, I do.
Do you have many of those?
Contracts?
Yes.
Negative. Not many. I wouldn't classify it as many.
What would you say, 1, 2, 3 over the period of time you've been with the governor's office?
No, more than that. The office of the governor also houses, as you're aware, the Division of Elections and the Human Rights Commission, which is where the majority of any contracts that we deal with come from.
Only in those agencies?
Primarily, yes. That's where the majority of them are.
Anything to do with the Department of Transportation contracts with that at all? Any contracts that you would be overseeing or paying invoices on that the Department of Transportation was doing the work?
I don't pay invoices generally, no.
You approve them?
Very few of them. Very few.
Has the governor ever had any interest in any other projects that would necessitate him to sign a contract? Or has he signed any contracts to your knowledge?
I believe he's only signed one, to my knowledge. I'm not absolutely certain.
What would that be?
I understand that he signed, or I believe that he signed a contract on the mansion renovation.
Is that normal for him to do that? Or would that be your responsibility?
That is not normal. No, it would normally be my responsibility, but I believe that happened very early in the administration.
Now, I want this question to be a friendly question, if you will.
All your questions are friendly, sir.
Watch out, sir.
Why me, counselor? Have you ever thrown away or caused to be lost any notes, memos, or any other written material concerning this particular Fairbanks complex or any of the papers that you've seen or done or any other project? As you recall, it has been done before. One other person I wanted to know, being that you're contacted in there, have you done any of that? Have you thrown away or caused to be mislaid or anything deliberately or like this? Have you done it? Thank you. And as contract officer in the governor's office, do you have any business or contact with the department heads concerning these concerning the contracts out of the governor's office? Do you negotiate with them? Do you direct them? Do you?
Contracts generally come to me, Senator, in final form.
In final form?
They've been negotiated just for me to sign off on, most generally.
But you would never...
Or to go over to the Department of Administration for them to negotiate.
But you're not the contract, the project officer, are you?
Oh, sir.
Is the governor? I'd like to...
Why don't you tell me what contract you're specifically talking about?
I'm not trying to trap you, but don't misunderstand me. You have to remember that there was a contract put out, a sole source contract on the mansion, which is relevant to this. Also, the governor signed that one, and you were the contract officer. Now, is that normal? Do we normally do things like that in your particular phase in this business?
I believe you will find that that's probably the only contract that was ever signed, and I also believe that by the governor, and I also believe you'll find out that I probably was out of town or not in the office when that occurred, or it never would have happened.
But it's your signature. Well, I won't pursue that. That'll be at another time, I'm sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. We're going to take a short recess, and then we'll come back to Senator Josephson. And let me indicate to the members of the Senate that we plan to stay here this evening until Ms. Herman's testimony is completed. A 10-minute break, and we'll be back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Herman, I'm obliged, I think, to go into some areas my colleagues and counsel have not at least gone into, perhaps to my understanding, and I'll try to be as brief as possible. I'm very interested in the matter of the discussion that Mr. Gorsuch said he had with you, which you don't recall, because I'm trying in my mind to understand better the atmosphere in the governor's office and the flow of information to the governor about problems that might affect his administration. And as Mr. Hamilton recited to you, if you'd like, I'll read this again, but you've heard it once. When Mr. Gorsuch testified, he said he went downstairs to see you, that he discussed with you the conversation he'd had with Jim Baldwin and John Rubini, that he told you that because of the facts of this particular situation, it was important that the Department of Law be involved actively in the transaction. Speaking of the apparent inconsistency between the constraints placed on the bid and the procedures whereby the contract would be let, that he pointed out to you two options: bid waiver involving public interest findings by the Department of Law and Department of Administration working together, or a change in the circumstances which would provide for true competitive bidding, and that if the department was not involved more actively in terms of developing the options for this problem, and that if they were to go ahead under the current configuration, that is narrow constraints in competitive bid, that he, as a matter of law, as Attorney General, would be forced to declare the procurement invalid, which then, of course, would produce controversies and difficulties, still quoting him. And so he reiterated that in his testimony that the department had to be actively involved with the governor's office and the Department of Administration. And he goes on to say that you took notes and went on to some other matters, and he went on to some other matters and went back upstairs. And then you followed up 2 or 3 days later and said, don't worry, your department will be involved. Everything will be done according to appropriate standards, and it's all taken care of. And then he went on to other things. And my first question is, this is the conversation, right, of which you have no specific recollection. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Would it be your practice in speaking to the Attorney General to make notes, as he said you did on this occasion? And would it be your practice to maintain a file of such notes if they were made?
My practice is, Senator, I do keep notes. When the issue is resolved, the problem is solved. I generally throw away the notes.
You mean that in this case, once the sole source decision was made, you would have thrown away notes, if you made them?
Notes that it would have been my practice to keep, if this had occurred, would have been to just highlight what it was he was telling me, take it to the appropriate person.
All right.
Maybe even leave the notes there. But I would impart what was contained in the notes.
But you have no recollection of ever destroying or throwing away the notes of a conversation like this, as Mr. Gorsuch described it, do you?
No, excuse me.
Do you have any conversation of the second call, or the second discussion, which he has stated under oath existed? You're calling him back and saying, don't worry, it's taken care of, your department will be actively involved. And so, would it be fair to say you have no explanation as you sit here as to what the Attorney General is talking about in this respect?
I certainly don't recall that conversation, Senator.
Would it be customary for the Attorney General, faced with what he thought might be a serious problem of irregularities or potential illegality or even simple press embarrassment involving the Department of Law, to come to you, or would he go to his ostensible client, the governor, and talk about these matters with the governor?
I would say both, or either, more appropriately. Norman and I visited frequently.
Well, I'm asking this question because here we know that two of his colleagues, Mr. Baldwin and Mr. Rubini, go to the Attorney General, say, we think there's a serious problem here. They take his attention. They get his attention. He promises he will do something and take care of the matter. And instead of going to the governor, he goes to you, not to Mr. Shively, but to you. And I'm wondering if you can help me understand why he would do that instead of going to see the governor or sending the governor a memorandum and giving his professional advice to the party, the actor, who, constitutionally speaking, is entitled to that advice.
Why he did not do that, Senator, I can't answer that question.
Maybe you don't have any knowledge that he did, by the way, go to the governor, do you?
I do not.
Okay. Now, at an earlier time, you had a conversation with Mr. Rubini and Mr. Lawrenson, and this concerned Mr. Jones' request that he of the Fairbanks Newsminer be permitted to see the file. Is that right?
As I understand, what Norman alleges occurred, he says occurred in November. My conversation with Ron Lawrenson and John Rubini was in the spring.
Okay, so I need to be, and I am corrected. The alleged conversation that Mr. Gorsuch initiated was in November 84. The conversation between yourself and Mr. Rubini and Mr. Lawrenson would have been April of this year, correct?
Correct.
And what do you understand, or what did they represent, was the purpose of their meeting with you on that occasion?
Their purpose of meeting with me was to alert me that this request had been made, to advise me what was in the file, and to further advise me that it was their position that they were not going to release the file to the Newsminer, and I believe even at that time they informed me that they were going to be forwarding it to the criminal division. As I recall, they notified me at that point.
Now, I remember reading about that the file, I think I read that the file was not going to be released because of a criminal investigation. Was the criminal investigation then begun?
Senator, I'm not absolutely certain.
Is it possible that the criminal investigation began because they didn't want to release the file? You don't know.
I don't know.
Was there any discussion that there might be a legal obligation to release the file unless there was a pending criminal investigation?
Not to my recollection.
The file then was not left with Mr. Shively or yourself by Mr. Rubini and Mr. Lawrenson?
No, I asked Mr. Rubini to copy the most pertinent parts of the file, that he felt was the most important, and leave it with me.
We heard the grand jury heard Mr. Shively testify that at one point or another, if my memory's right, he had the file, and he threw out an RFP with the governor's initials on. Is this the same file that Mr. Rubini and Mr. Lawrence had when they saw you in April of 1985?
The file that they had was from the Department of Administration.
Okay, and the file of Mr. Shively's was a governor's office file, is that correct?
His own file, yes, that's correct. Senator, if I might, thinking about it, since you've asked the question, I do not believe that I was told at that meeting by Mr. Rubini and Mr. Lawrence that there was an investigation underway. I do not believe so, or I would not have asked for the copies.
Well, you know, I'm interested in this because I haven't, other senators may know this better than I do. I had assumed that if a newspaper requested a file that was not classified for some reason, that under the open laws we have in Alaska, open records laws, that would be a legal obligation to make the file available to that requester, unless there was some privilege relating to a, perhaps such as a pending criminal investigation. Can you help me there? You're talking to members of the...
It was my understanding that they impounded the file, didn't want it released until they had time to review it. And when they came to me, as I recall, they were still in their review process. I'm certain if it was already a criminal investigation, I wouldn't have been given copies even if I'd asked.
So in effect, the file was withheld from Mr. Jones, although there was no open criminal investigation, to your best of your knowledge, then extant. Is that correct?
To the best of my knowledge, when they were in my office, I do not believe that there was an investigation.
I noted in reading your testimony, not your statement on interview to Randy Johnston of the State Troopers and Dean Guinelli of the Department of Law, several things I'd like to ask you about. And I'd call your attention to page 5 of that material. Mr. Guinelli is speaking. And he's referring, if you'll permit me to say so, to a conversation that you had with John Shively. He being John Shively, I believe. And Mr. Guinelli says, okay, did he, Shively, indicate to you that he had told us that he didn't know how Lenny got the map because he was trying to protect you? And you answered, I got that impression, yes. Okay, it wasn't as though he used those exact words, but was that what he was trying to convey? Answer, yes, that was certainly my opinion. Okay, and you say the indication was that if something was wrong, what was wrong was the fact Lenny had the document and I was the one who sent the documents to Lenny, right? Is that the answer you gave at that time? And, but you've also testified that at the time that you sent the RFP to Mr. Arsenault, you didn't know its contents at all, correct?
Correct.
And you were acting on Mr. Shively, on the governor's instructions, I should say, on the governor's instructions, without reading the content, and as Senator Boot wrote out, you wouldn't have had time to read the material because you got it from Anselm Stack and you went out to the airport to put it on the next available flight, correct?
As I recall, yes.
Now, this RFP was marked draft, and I'm going to ask a question that I think some of my colleagues have commented upon informally. You also testified that you had worked for Sheffield Enterprises and you were there during the developing years of the success story that is Sheffield Enterprises, and you are a jack of all trades, as someone called you in the governor's office. You were also in that capacity in the private sector, is that right? Working with Bill Sheffield?
My statement.
In that experience, did the organization have the opportunity or desire to submit or responses to RFPs to the state government?
I don't believe so. Not that I was familiar with, Senator.
Okay. So you would not have any personal experience as a vendor with the issue of equal opportunity for competitive work with the state?
Sir.
I mentioned page 5 because we have the situation where it's indicated to you by Mr. Shively that he has misled Mr. Hickey because he's trying to protect you, and then later on at page 34, you're not saying certain things to the governor because you're trying to protect the governor. Is there some kind of atmosphere suggested here that in the, I've never been part of an executive branch of government, Laurie. Is there some kind of atmosphere here where different people are just protecting each other rather than dealing openly and candidly with each other? And incidentally, Mr. Hickey was part of the executive branch too, we know. Is that a general atmosphere?
I don't think so, no.
If you'll turn in the same testimony to page 16. Again, we were talking about your meeting with Mr. Lawrenson and Mr. Rubini. They came down and talked to you, and at line 19, I looked at it, and some of the memos I thought was pretty damaging. I was looking at it from a point of view of a newspaper reporter reporting that kind of thing in the paper. And I went in and I told John and that I had just talked with Ron Lawrenson and John Rubini, and I relayed the whole story to him that had been relayed to me, and I said, and I've seen, I went through the file, and some of it to me is going to look pretty bad. Quinelli says, okay, did you show him any of the memos or anything in the file? Herman, no, nor did he ask for them. He just said if they wanted to talk any more about that, that I should have them to talk to him. Now, do I understand by this that Mr. Shively says that if the newspapers want any information, refer the calls to me? Well, who is them?
The Department of Law. Mr. Rubini or Mr. Lawrence.
Okay. And he would talk to them without even looking at the memos and notes that you thought were so damaging or alarming or harmful?
I believe, as I recall, I had told him just vaguely what the contents of...
You had told Mr. Shively what it was that concerned you.
Yes.
And you inferred that he was able, he thought he was able to talk to the lawyers without actually seeing the material
itself.
That's
correct.
And then at page 18, Randy Johnson says, what was your need to, or why did you request the copies of paperwork in Rubini's possession? Did you have to brief the governor on that? Answer, uh-huh. Affirmative answer. That would have been my intent. And rather than hold them up while I sat there and looked through, that was the file I'm sure that I looked at. Obvious, I just asked him to copy that which he thought was the most damaging and most pertinent. And he came back with maybe 25 sheets of paper. Now, at that point, your mental state is that you are going to tell Governor Sheffield about what the nature of that paperwork. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
But by the time you would get to page 34, it appears to me that you've changed your mind because you're now concerned that he shouldn't know what I think he ought to know, what John thinks he ought to know. And it was my professional judgment it was best if Bill Sheffield only talked about what it was that he knew.
I believe what occurred in that interim, I believe that the governor was out of town on the day that John and Ron came to see me. I'm relatively certain of that. And by the time he got back to town, I believe it had gone from them reviewing the files to an investigation. And that's why I'm relatively certain that was the chain of events.
Well, now there are two possibilities that I can think of, and maybe others can think of others with respect to page 34. It is correct, first, that your intentions in terms of briefing the governor changed, and I think you just indicated that's because a criminal investigation was beginning. But one inference might be that you didn't want the governor to know more than he already knew because you wanted any testimony or statements he made in the course of the criminal investigation to be based on Bill Sheffield's personal knowledge, and that that would be consonant with, I suppose, your duty as a citizen and employee to make sure that he wasn't confused about what he knew and what he didn't know, correct? That would be one possibility. The other possibility is that you wanted the governor to be able to deny knowledge of matters which might be harmful to him to know. Can you help me understand which concern you were acting upon in not giving him the information which you had earlier intended to give him about what was in those notes and memos?
Example you cited first, Senator.
One of the things that I have some problem with on this is that most of us in politics get, I would dare say, most of our information from the oral conversation or the interaction of discussion, as this Senate is doing tonight, more than we do from the printed page. And it seems to me that whatever a governor knows is basically what lawyers might call hearsay. He is acting upon reports and input from constituents and lobbyists and legislators and commissioners. And I think that is the way this governor acts, is it not? That he is, Mr. Shively said he has a pretty open door policy. He sees lots of people. He gets a lot of the information he gets in any event from discussions with people. Isn't that true? So why would it be particularly confusing in terms of the criminal investigation for him to get one more set of verbal input from you in terms of these 20-some pages that you thought were damaging?
Well, I believe, as I testified, that I did describe for him basically what was contained, what the sum and substance of what was contained in that file.
Well, on page 34, have you got it before you, Lori?
I have it a moment, Senator.
Page 34, question by Mr. Ganelli at line 7. Besides from going over the file with him, this is because you said that you didn't go over the file with him up above on line 3. The question was, okay, did you sit down with the governor and go over the file with John Robini? No. You haven't had occasion to? You were speaking then that you didn't go over the file with the governor, is that right? Okay. And then the question is, beside from going over the file with him, have you discussed in general what was in there and there could be a bad public reaction? And you answered, yes, I have done that. So that is your testimony tonight in answer to my question, is that you're saying that you did in general go over what was in there, correct?
I believe I did.
Well, what if anything was the material that you did not disclose to him because you had a professional judgment that he shouldn't know certain things?
I didn't show him the 25 pages that I had, if it was in fact 25 pages. I'm not certain how many there were.
Okay, so to be perfectly clear about this, you're saying that you gave the governor the sum and substance of what you had read.
Correct.
But you did not give him the materials to read himself?
That's
that
correct.
About the size of it? And again, you did not give him the materials to read because why would that be? Because you did not want him answering things in a criminal investigation that he had read? I don't understand. You've now said that you did tell him things about what was in the file, which of course he would be free to and knowing about if he was asked questions by Mr. Hickey or Mr. Ganelli or the grand jury, correct? He now had the general information that was in the file.
He knew, that's correct, what the issue was. That's correct.
But he could not answer questions based on an employee's notes about sham processes and that sort of thing, handwritten notes that we found in the exhibits, correct? Did you think then that that material, those pages of material, would come to the attention of the investigators in any of that?
They were in the file, yes.
They were in the prosecutor's file.
They were in the file that was shown to me by John Rubini and Ron Lawrence, which by the time I was talking with the governor had, as I recall, been turned over to the criminal division.
So the material that you decided as a professional judgment not to share with the governor was material that the prosecutor already had access to, is that correct?
That's correct.
Said it became pretty clear the direction this thing was going, Lori. That was a reference to what? The criminal investigation?
It became pretty obvious to me that that was probably what was going to happen.
Okay. And then you said, and having been down this road before, was there another criminal investigation of a similar nature involving the administration? What criminal investigation was that?
That was the
fundraising trip, I see. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senator Sackett.
Mr. Chairman, earlier in the evening, Ms. Herman indicated that she stated that she did not have a meeting with the Attorney General regarding the bid waiver exception. Mr. Hamilton then read from the transcripts the statements made by the Attorney General, which are on page 1679 and 1680. However, Mr. Hamilton did not read the entire conversation there, and I would like to show to the body at least the concern that I have, which now raises doubt in my mind as to just exactly what did occur. Mr. Hamilton read in the answer that Mr. Gorsuch made about going downstairs to see Lori Herman and discuss with her the conversation he had with Jim Baldwin and John Rubini. And during that period of time, he pointed out that there were two options that they had discussed. One was to go ahead with a bid waiver, etc., and working with the department administration and the need for his department to work together. The second alternative was to change in the circumstances so that we could go to competitive bid. I'm going through the highlights. During that period of the discussion, she took notes, I recall, and then she took down the notes, and then I went into some other matters and went back upstairs. And then 2 or 3 days later, I was down on another matter, and she mentioned, by the way, about the conversation we had in connection with the leasing. Don't worry, your department will be involved. Everything will be done according to appropriate standards, and it's all taken care of. So upon hearing that, I went on to other things. Question, have you now told us everything that you can recollect today about those two conversations with Lori Herman? Answer. That is all I have. I would tell you that my total, I think the total amount of time I spent with Lori Herman on that topic was no more than 2 or 3 minutes, and that's about all I can remember. In order to talk about two options and two alternatives that the Attorney General discussed with, allegedly discussed with Ms. Herman, in order for her, him to note that at the period of time that she was taking notes, and on line 10 of page 1680, to indicate that I went into some other matters, and also on that same page to indicate that 2 days later I talked to her again. In my mind, and with my experience at least, would take more than 2 or 3 minutes. If he had said 5 or 10 minutes, 10 or 15 minutes, 20 minutes that I spent with her, there would be no doubt in my mind that the total conversation that he allegedly had with her did in fact take place. And it leaves doubt in my mind, and I just wanted to mention this to the Rules Committee, that there is a question here that I think probably should be looked at, because the implication that was made by Mr. Hamilton was that Ms. Herman didn't remember, or purposely didn't remember, and that in fact that the testimony by the Attorney General was factual and that it did occur. And I do feel that there is some question here. I did want to mention too that the doubt that I have, I think, is a legitimate concern, and in no way am I attempting, as you just indicated to the press with regard to the grand jury requests I have, in attempting to sidetrack the issues. But it's something that I think that we should all be aware of, that if you look at the total conversation in its entire context, there could be doubt there as to exactly who was telling the truth.
Senator Fakes.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I can comment, I had considered writing up requesting that the Attorney General or the former Attorney General appear before us to question just that transaction, because there is a vast difference of opinion here. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Laurie, did you see Mr. Shively's testimony on TV today? I'm going to be asking you a series of questions like that about office procedures and things. Okay.
I was in and out a little bit.
Okay, well, I just kind of wanted to give you some forewarning there. But first, I've had several people ask, why did you personally go to the airport with that RFP to Lenny rather than sending a courier with it?
Not my general practice when I'm sending things for the governor to send them with a courier.
Oh, I guess why I'm confused on it is because you said you didn't know if it was personal until you approached the counter and then made the decision to spend the private funds with that. So you must have made the decision that it was personal when you yourself went rather than a courier going. Well, could you help me with that?
Well, I'll try to help you with that. I don't have a specific recollection of the exact time of day that this occurred. I think it was late in the afternoon. I think I have testified that I felt that it was something that needed to be done now. I made that decision. Just get it off my desk. I don't want to deal with this minor detail. And it was my decision to take it myself to the airport.
Rather than sending a courier with this minor detail.
I can only speculate that, as I remember, it was fairly late in the day when I sent this, when I went myself, and it could be, again, I don't want to speculate because I'm not absolutely certain.
Okay, Laurie, thanks. Laurie, what was the understanding between you and Governor Sheffield on the extent and the authority you had to use his personal funds?
He trusts me to use his personal funds.
And you, this is a common practice between you. You've been doing this for a number of years.
I've been doing it for quite some time, yes.
Thanks, Laurie. Is the governor vague or clear in giving instructions, Laurie? Office instructions, procedures?
It would depend. I think it depends on the issue.
I don't understand.
And the people that he's dealing with.
Okay, could you explain that more for me? Could you show me the difference? Maybe you could tell me when he's vague.
He would be vague if it was a subject matter that he and I had dealt with at least on one other occasion. If there was something else he wanted done or a follow-up, that would be vague. But he can be very specific if, for instance, it's the first time that you've talked with him about this matter.
Okay, so if it's an ongoing matter, if it's something that he knows is being done or you've talked about once before, then he would give vague instructions along which, how would he give those vague instructions?
Again, it a number of ways. Sometimes he communicates through little handwritten notes. Sometimes he communicates through typewritten notes that he has his secretary, he dictates to his secretary. Sometimes he just calls on the intercom. And
does he just assume that these things get done then? Once he gives a specific instruction, say, on a new issue, then the vague instructions follow along. He's assuming that these things are just getting done?
Well, generally, if they aren't done, Senator, it comes to his attention rapidly.
Okay, thanks, Laura. It's out there. The various state employees, the various commissioners, the various department heads, division heads.
My relationship with them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was allowed to deal... I guess I'm not really understanding the question. Was I able to deal with...
Yeah, did you have any specific assignment or relationship with them? Did you have any specific instructions on how to communicate with them?
Not specifically, no.
But you did communicate with division directors or commissioners?
Cabinet, sub-cabinet directors, and occasionally classified service.
Under what kind of circumstances, Lori, did you communicate with these folks?
Which folks?
The cabinet folks, the division directors.
I can give you a for instance.
Sure.
Let's say we'd been on a trip out in the field. Hypothetically, let's say we went to Bethel. I was staffing the trip. I keep track of everything that's said. I get back to town. I'm aware of what critical issues have been brought up with the governor, what things need to be done immediately. We've probably talked about it on the airplane. I've agreed that I will talk to Commissioner X, inform him of this problem, and see if we can't get working on it.
Okay, so then after a trip, or if you had the governor's instructions, then you'd basically act like a chief of staff, too. You would communicate direct instructions from the governor to various
That's
members
correct.
Of the... Okay, thanks, Laura. Was it the governor's intention that you be a representative then in communicating with people in his administration?
I believe so, yes.
How do the commissioners generally communicate with the governor, Lori?
Commissioners communicate with the governor either via telephone, meetings in the office, or through written memoranda.
The testimony shows that at least one commissioner, the Attorney General, liked to communicate through you, at least in this particular incident. There is debate over that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me expound on that. Sometimes they do communicate through the special staff assistants. They are the governor's liaison person with each of the departments. And I'm sorry, there is a lot of communication between the special assistants and the commissioners.
Thank you.
Relaying things to the governor.
Lori, in an average day, how many various issues would you estimate that the governor discusses or reviews? Just kind of give me a total number there on an average day.
Senator, that would be very difficult to do. There's all the phone calls, there's all the meetings in the office, there's all the correspondence in and out. Oh, boy. It would be awesome.
So awesome that you really don't want to estimate.
Okay, thank you.
How are assignments in the governor's office generally determined?
assignments as to...
On issues, on problems, on constituent requests.
The special assistants each have a portfolio of departments that they are the liaison person for. And any issues relating to those departments are referred to those special assistants.
Unless you got them on a trip.
Well, no, that's I don't necessarily mean to make you think that I take care, whoever staffs the trip takes care of everything that happens on the trip. When you come back from a trip, you funnel it to the proper special assistant, unless there is a critical problem that needs to be dealt with right now.
Thank you, Lori, for that clarification. How did the governor decide on priorities, on which issues or projects would get done ahead of another issue or project?
How does he decide? Well, I think probably based on the importance of what he's dealing with, what the issue is. I mean, obviously, the Thanksgiving Day storm had to be dealt with before an energy plan. Things have a way of setting their own priorities, I think.
Are there timelines set? Are there specific schedules set for getting things done? Is there a project jar, sort of type of thing, of getting things done?
Specific issues, I wouldn't say there's a project jar, no, but there are definite timelines, priorities that have to be met, yes.
Lori, was the governor involved in reviewing RFPs involving leases on a regular basis?
I wouldn't say on a regular basis. I don't believe so.
How often?
But I'm not, Lori, I'm not really, I wouldn't be the one who would be taking those to him, so I'm not certain that I'm the best person to answer that question.
Lori, you said you were a contract certifying officer. Did I understand that answer correct to Senator
Booth? I'm a certifying
Booth?
Officer in the office of the governor. I have signature authority to sign documents.
Okay. Can you tell us what that is? Is what kind of documents? Could you just explain to me a little bit further what a certifying officer would be?
Basically, a certifying officer can attest to having funds, can encumber funds, sign contracts, those kinds of things.
Have you ever had an opportunity to review the policies and procedures implemented by the Department of Administration for the ethical conduct by state employees associated with awarding bids, specifically the prohibition against giving information to one bidder which is not available to all prospective bidders? And for my colleagues and for counsel, this is attachment C, which was provided for the committee earlier today. It's on page 1 of 4 of attachment C. Item number F.
I don't think I've seen it.
We've not been provided with a copy. You know, we're not testifying, so we've not seen it.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, could they have a copy? And I'll be glad to repeat the question if you want me to.
Let me just make an announcement while we're waiting here. If you want to review that. The intention of the Rules Committee is to stay here as long as the majority of the committee is willing and as long as Ms. Herman and her attorney don't feel like it's placing an undue burden on Ms. Herman. So we will stay and attempt to finish up the testimony unless Ms. Herman feels that she would like to recess for the evening.
Mr. Chairman, we're content to do that as well, except I would note that we have been testifying for just shy of 50 minutes. My training tells me that there is witness fatigue that sets in without recess.
Rules Committee is in recess for 10 minutes. And Senator Bates, if you want to continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How far would I get if I made a motion to adjourn?
If you have 3 votes on the Rules Committee, Senator, make a motion.
I haven't worked on it, Mr. Chairman. It
probably wouldn't be terribly hard, but in the meantime, let's keep going.
Okay. All right. Laura, you haven't had a chance to look at those standards and policies and procedures promulgated by Department of Administration. Have you ever seen those before?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Does the governor's office have any standards or procedures in dealing with RFPs or bids or contracts?
We have policies and procedures manual, but I do not believe that it covers bids and contracts and RFPs, no.
Well, what do you all do then in the governor's office to ensure that all citizens of Alaska get treated equally then? I mean, do you have any guidelines that you use at all in dealing with RFPs or contracts or leases or bids?
Within the office of the governor, the bids that we are responsible for, the contracts we are responsible for, yes, there is a policy, a standard operating procedure, a policies and procedures manual that is followed by the people in the fiscal office who put those together, yes.
Okay. But what about an occurrence like sending the RFP to Lenny? Would you have had any guidelines to follow as to whether that was appropriate or not appropriate, whether you would have checked, was it available to all citizens of Alaska, or was this a draft document? Was there anything in the governor's office that would have those guidelines for you?
Not to my knowledge.
Do you think there should be?
Generally, what happens, well, that's a point well taken. Probably there should be, yes.
Thanks, Lori. Did the governor ever discuss with you, Lori, his concerns about the public's feelings on sole source contracting in general now?
I believe I was probably in on some discussions.
Can you remember the tone or what was said in those discussions?
I think that probably there has been a level of concern for quite some time about sole source contracts, yes. From a perception point of view, they're very, very difficult that way.
How do you think the public feels about them?
I can't answer that. I don't know how the public feels about them.
But you know they're concerned.
Perhaps I misstated my answer. I think probably sole source contracts can create some very big perception problems.
Did the governor ever discuss with you his concerns over the Fifth Avenue Center sole source contract and the public's perception of what that might be?
Or believe so.
No discussion on the sole sourcing or the public's perception of the sole sourcing on that particular contract?
Not with me, to my recollection.
Does the governor ever review draft documents?
I believe so.
Under what kinds of circumstances?
Well, again, Senator, I wouldn't be the one who was taking those to him, so I probably am not the best person to answer that question.
Would you know whether they were ever modified after the governor reviewed them?
I don't believe so.
Did you hear prior to this mess starting that anyone from the Department of Administration was upset or felt pressured over the proceedings with the Fifth Avenue Center?
No, I don't believe so.
Anselm or Commissioner Rudd never conveyed any frustration feelings or pressure feelings with you? Did anyone from the Department of Administration ever convey to you that there was any interfering with their price negotiation sessions?
No.
And did anyone contact you concerning this lease after it was designated sole source? Did you talk to anybody about this lease after it was declared sole source and it was in the process of being negotiated?
I don't believe so, no.
Did you ever discuss the financial arrangements with the Fifth Avenue Center with anyone? Did the governor or anyone else ever ask you to send a draft RFP or any other bid specifications to a potential bidder other than the one that you sent to Lenny?
No. Would you repeat that?
Sure, no problem at all. Did the governor or anyone else ever ask you to send a draft RFP or any draft bid specifications to any potential person, any potential bidder, other than the one that you sent to Lenny? Did you do that any other time? You sent the one to Lenny. Did you send that kind of document to anyone else ever?
I don't have any specific recollection of it, but I'm not saying that it's never happened. It could have happened. Someone could have made a request of me to provide that information.
Mr. Chairman, I'm finished.
Thank you, Senator. Senator DeVries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Department of Law came to you with this file and said that they had a request from the Fairbanks News Miner to release this file, did you in your mind question why they did not go directly to the governor rather than come to you?
I do not believe the governor was in town.
Thank you. Do you feel that you have used a sizable amount of the governor's personal funds to send state documents to political contributors? No. Okay. Calling your attention to the phone call that you went down to make at the Baranoff, have there been other times that people in the administration have requested that you make phone calls outside of the 465-3500 number? Okay. Do you have any response to why Mr. Stack would not remember providing the RFP to you, since you said that he personally handed it to you?
Would you repeat the first part?
Do you have any response to why Mr. Stack would not remember providing the RFP to you, since he apparently personally handed it to you? I believe that was your testimony. You know why he would not remember that? Okay. In your working relationship with him, did you find that he normally could remember the things that you guys would discuss or issues that
would
be? I
don't believe I've had many occasions to.
So it would even be more of an unusual circumstance, since you didn't often work with him, for him to bring that document to you and give it to you personally then. Is that right?
What I was saying was I haven't had many, if any, occasions to know whether or not he remembered our dealings until this instance.
Had you read the testimony where he had stated that, or did you see that in the newspaper where he stated that he could not remember bringing that document to you?
I believe I read it in the testimony.
Okay. And did Mr. Stack normally bring documents to you personally? So is this an unusual?
No, it wasn't unusual for him to personally deliver something I had requested.
Okay, so that happened quite often. Thank you. Thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Victor Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I have before me a document that you don't have, but I don't think it's too relevant to you. It's a summary of testimony of Anselm Stock. And I'd like to thank the chief counsel for making it available. I requested it. I wish I'd had it during Shively's testimony and had read it before. But it says here, and this is a summary. This is not verbatim. On Anselm's testimony. Sometime just prior to June 28, 1984, Stack met with Commissioner Rudd to discuss the Fairbanks consolidation. At this meeting, Rudd commented that, quote, they, parentheses referring to the governor's office, close parentheses, would like to do a sole source on this. Now, this is long before the October 2 meeting. And I intend to pursue this with Mrs. Stock. In the meantime, I would like to know that would you have made it known to Commissioner Rudd or to anyone in the Department of Administration on or before June 28, 1984, that the governor's office or the governor would like to do a sole source on the Fairbanks project? Do you personally know whether either the governor himself or Mr. Shively, on or before June 28, 1984, made such a preference known such a desire known to Commissioner Rudd or anyone in the Department of Administration?
No, I do not personally know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Fisher. Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry it is so late. Going back to the governor's schedule and Mr. Conway's questions originally, I think you testified that the governor was, at that time frame, following through and making sure that his appointments were actually made for the trip. He was checking on budgetary specifics, working with commissioners, and he was, of course, traveling to Bethel and doing the daily constituent work, so he was pretty busy. We had some testimony earlier on just how the governor operates on a personal basis, being a detail person or a concept person or something like this. From your experience in dealing with the governor, is he someone that generally worked from the detail to the general, from the general to the specific? What kind of a method did he have? I mean, we've all dealt with him, but it's pretty hard to tell sometimes exactly how someone else works on things. But did he generally do his own details, I guess, is part of the question.
It would depend on how important the issue or project was to him.
Well, could you just try and explain to us how he worked on a project? Would he take specific notes, specific details, and the details would remind him of the subject matter, or would he think of the subject matter and not really worry about the details?
Again, Senator, really would depend on the importance of the subject matter to him, whether he dealt in the details.
If it were important to him, he would deal in details?
Generally, yes.
Does he generally, I think you answered this a little bit before, when he's given instructions, he generally does check to ensure that they're carried out, particularly if someone has asked him about it or he's been jogged on that particular question by some other event?
Does he follow up on them?
Yes.
Yes, he does, if he's been asked, yes.
So he would...
People don't generally always report back to him on his messages to them, but it becomes, I think, as I said, eminently clear in a very short period of time if things aren't being done.
So he checks to make sure things are done?
No, I don't think that's what I said. Occasionally he checks to see that things are done, but if they aren't being, he doesn't necessarily follow up on every note that he sends out of that office. No, that isn't, I want to make it clear that that's not what I'm saying.
Okay,
nor is it always necessary.
Right.
Generally, when he is asking that something be done and it isn't getting done, it becomes real clear real fast.
Okay, then.
And then, yes,
okay, I've got you.
The intercom ring.
I think I understand that. Back to the file from DOA that you had 20 or 25 copies, or however many copies you had, of potentially problem information. How did you go about informing the governor of that? Did you kind of take notes and go in to talk to him, or how did you go in and talk to the governor about that file?
I probably just went in and told him everything that I knew about the situation, that this was what had happened. I believe when I got to the governor, as I recall, it had progressed from a review process by the Department of Law to an investigation. As I recall, that's what had occurred. So when I was sitting in the governor's office, it was now an investigation, when I was informing him of what was happening.
You didn't show him any of the copies. You think you took them in there just to try and make sure that
no,
you remembered
the
copies?
No, I don't believe I did.
Did you take any notes in there, or just what you could remember?
Probably just what I could remember. I may have had some notes.
And you probably tried to go through the highlights. This may be a problem. This guy in Fairbanks is saying this. This guy in Anchorage is saying this kind of thing?
I'm not sure that I knew the physical locations of... I'm not even sure I knew the authors of...
Or somebody in DOA says this, and
yes,
it could be a problem if it gets to the press, and this is happening here, and just down through the list of whatever you thought was the highlights of the file. Was there anything in the file on the footprint, as you called it?
I don't know. I don't recall there being anything in there, but I don't know.
Okay, so you did go through the stuff that you could think of as highlights in the file. Have you ever been aware prior to the grand jury report that Mr. Shively had thrown away the RFP with the governor's initials on it?
Yes.
Reading your testimony, both sworn and unsworn, and here, it seems that there was an awfully conspiratorial attitude permeating the third floor. It seems communication was falling apart in places that it shouldn't have, and there were some real problems, you know, regardless of any of the things that we're looking at. What was happening?
In regard to what, Senator?
Well, in regard to the management and operation of the office. When I read that you know, information wasn't passing from the Attorney General's office to the governor, information wasn't passing to the Attorney General's office in which to be able to give you advice on either, it's hard to understand just, and also that you go outside to make phone calls. I served with a bunch of people in the legislature that I think had a pretty conspiratorial attitude. Did you sweep the office for bugs on the telephones and this sort of thing at any time in this period?
Oh.
Well, at least you weren't that far into the process.
Senator Halpert, if I could interject, that's been done several times on the Senate side, as you well know.
I just am amazed that it had gone that far, and I'm disappointed that it had gone that far, because we wouldn't probably be here if there'd been better communication. I guess there's no way you can comment on that. It's passed. That's all I have.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Elias, we're pretty close to the end. Senator Elias.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gloria, I know it's getting late and we're tired, and I'm sure you are also. I'm not even sure we're getting anywhere, or I'm not sure we've got anywhere to go. But I do notice that there was considerable time spent on the questioning of John Shively by the governor's counsel. Of course, John's been with the governor for 7 years, and he's known the governor for 7 years, and Senator Josephson was quite interested in that particular line of questioning, and so was Senator Ray. And here, you've been here with the governor for 14 years in private practice and in government business, and they've had the opportunity to question you. I'm wondering why, I'm just curious, why they didn't ask you those same questions, because obviously you know the governor much better than John Shively. And the question I have, of course, comes from the governor's counsel as it relates to what he asked Mr. Shively. Now, I don't know if it's an oversight or what, but
Mr. Chairman,
I would like to just ask you the same question.
I'm sorry, Senator Josephson.
I'll be glad to answer you, Senator. I didn't ask Mr. Shively.
I'm not questioning you, Senator Josephson.
I don't think it's appropriate, very frankly, to ask a witness what is the ultimate issue before this body. We are the deciders of whether or not the governor told the truth or not, and I think that if we were in a courtroom, we would be saying that it invades the province of the jury to ask someone the ultimate question we have to decide, but that's my personal view.
Senator Lyson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not here for a lesson in the law. I'm here to just ask a simple question. The question being, I'm sure it's not going to offend you or your counsel or Senator Ray or Senator Josephson, but I think it's a question that should be asked, because you probably know more about the governor than anybody else in this room. The question is, do you recall ever encountering any experience where you attended a briefing session of a discussion with the governor on a particular day, and shortly thereafter, for whatever reason, he did not recall the events that took place during that briefing or discussion? It's very pertinent to what we're doing here.
Yes, I have.
Could you be more specific? Can you give some examples?
I can probably best give you, first, just so that you're not misled, Senator, I've known the governor for 14 years. I've only worked with him for 7. The governor's recollection, memory, if you will, of things he's briefed on is sharpest on the issues that are of the greatest importance to him, the greatest importance of the day, of the week, if you will, what's on everyone's mind in the state, where you sometimes have a vague recollection and a memory problem is when you get down into those issues that are of
lesser importance. I'm hard-pressed to cite specific examples, but that basically is where his memory is the worst, is if it is something that is not of the utmost importance in his mind.
In other words, you're saying you were not surprised that he could not recall certain events that we're talking about now because it was not at that particular time a priority in his schedule?
Yes.
So it's not unusual?
Would not
be unusual?
No, I don't believe so.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Ray?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might answer Senator Elias for just a second there. I've known the governor probably less than Ms. Herman, and I could testify as to his forgetfulness because I've asked him to put things in the budget.
I remember to take them out.
But I didn't do that. If I might, Ms. Herman, I'm sitting here thinking all this time that the Attorney General came down and had a non-existent conversation, or a conversation that lasted just a few minutes, and it wasn't to your memory, you don't even remember it, but he testified that he came down and said, "How's everything going? Okay?" And you said, "Yeah, everything's okay," and he went back upstairs and afterwards took care of something else. And then along come Mr. Rubini, and the Department of Administration was asking if there were certain things that shouldn't be done with the lease. And Mr. Rubini and Mr. Baldwin were in a conversation with you, and that was, I believe, at a later time. But apparently there had been a time of 3 or 4 months that had transpired there that this had been going on in the Department of Administration. From the testimony that some of those people have given, they were fearful that they were going to do something wrong, and they were going to hire an attorney because they were being pressured to do something wrong, and all this goes on. I can't get it in my mind what kind of an operation was being run here by the Department of Law. I really can't believe what kind of an operation was going on. So I'm going to ask you a very sensitive question, and it's one that I hope that you take a little time and considering before you do answer it, because to my mind, it's a very critical question. In retrospect, Ms. Herman, do you believe that there was at any time a conspiracy or a collusion with the Department of Law, which means the prosecutor himself too, was there a collusion or a conspiracy to do political damage to the governor? The reason I'm asking this is because they indicted him after the fact rather than advised him previously to prevent him from possibly doing an illegal act. Now, do you believe that there was at any time a conspiracy or a collusion within the Department of Law to embarrass politically the governor?
I don't believe so, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Senator Elias.
I just had a procedure question, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if, in fact, not being a member of the Rules Committee, I wonder if the Rules Committee members reserve the ability to interrupt the questioning of the senator, or is that accorded to all of us, or how we can handle that?
Well, according to the rules of procedure that were adopted, only rules members can object to the questioning of a witness, and the chief counsel for the Senate and the counsel to a witness and the governor's counsel. Sometimes we get a little loose, I suppose, Senator, and it's a little late tonight. We'll try to see that it doesn't happen again.
Well, I would hope not, because I think that we all have equal ability here to express our questions, and I've been here, I believe, as long as anyone, or longer than most people at this table, with the exception of Senator Ray, and I resent that.
Okay, I
know it's getting late, and we're getting touchy, but I resent it anyway.
We have two short questions to go, and then one question from Mr. Hamilton, and we're getting pretty close to the end. Senator Joseph.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I interrupted the senator, I apologize. I understood he was asking a question as to why I had not pursued something, or Senator Ray had not pursued something. In fact, I thought it went to some motive I might have, and I wanted to make it clear, Senator, my feelings about the question that I understood you were asking. I was responding to you.
It was not a question of the state.
You raised my name in the issue, and I felt privileged to respond when my name is mentioned. I apologize if you consider that an interruption.
Senator Fink.
Mr. Chairman, can I make my motion to adjourn now?
I have one question.
No, Senator, we're that close from being done for the evening.
One thing that puzzles me, and it may not be a big deal, Laurie, but in your statement to the investigators, you said that Mr. Shively smiled at you about the map, told you Lenny had the map, and I said, and how did Lenny get the map? And he smiled at me, and I said, that was what I, and I said, I guess that's what you meant, was that what I sent to Lenny? And he said, yes. And the question was, okay, so when he smiled at you all of a sudden, you remember that you had sent it to him, answer that I had sent something to Lenny. And then later on, did he suggest to you that you might be in some kind of trouble for having sent whatever it was you sent to Lenny? Answer, affirmative answer. Now, I want to know what your feeling about this was, because, quite frankly, if I were in your position, I would be furious with John Shively or with the governor to put you in a position where you might be in trouble for mailing something, the contents of which you didn't know. And I read here that Mr. Shively thought it was kind of funny. He smiled about it. What was your state of mind, you as an agent, as an innocent, thinking you might be in trouble for mailing something, the contents of which you were unaware of?
What was my state of mind?
So did you feel angry or abused or upset that you might get in trouble for being a messenger of a document as to which you had no knowledge of the contents, except you knew it was an RFP, but you didn't know there's anything. The concern here was the map. You didn't know what the contents of the RFP were.
I don't believe I was angry.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And the last Senate question of the evening is Senator Bennett.
Yes, Lord. It's my understanding that a few days before the grand jury was impaneled, Governor Sheffield was briefed by Mr. Hickey of the contents of what was there. Were you present at that briefing?
No, sir.
Did you know that briefing was happening or going to happen?
Yes, I was. I was aware it was going on.
Can I inquire as to how you knew about that?
I believe that I put it on the schedule.
Thank you.
Okay, that concludes the Senate portion of the question.
Ms. Herman, as to the 25-page file that you got from Mr. Rubini and Mr. Lorenzen, I believe you testified that you did not show that to the governor and did not show it to Mr. Shively. What did you do with that file?
Filed it in the Fairbanks office complex file. I had a small file.
And where is the file now?
Department of Law took my file.
It was turned over to the prosecutors?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Hamilton. Laurie, the committee would hope that you would remain available to us through the witness portion of the rules hearings. Hopefully, we'll be through that by Saturday. The agenda for tomorrow, if we go in at 1:30 in the same room, we listen to the testimony of Anselm Stack. We bring up the questions relating to the grand jury process. Then in the evening, we listen to Lenny Arsenault.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Sturgeon.
Yes, if there was a deposition prepared of testimony by Mr. Stack, I wonder if that could be made available prior to the meeting.
We'll research that, Senator, and we will have it available if possible. If by no other questions, then the Senate Rules Committee is adjourned until 1:30 tomorrow afternoon.